Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. It's your boy TP Thomas here at the helm. Welcome to the Sunday morning brunch. You got the next 90. Now, I'm not even going to give you all of that. We got a lot of stuff to jump into, going from boxing, aftermath for the NBA draft, baseball. I'm a little teed off of what's going on in the hockey world. But Sports City, just stay tuned. We got a lot on slate for y'all. Hopefully y'all can do these dishes. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped inside the kitchen. Timeless is alive.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City chance with Sunday the brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
Kick back, relax, enjoy this. Everybody, don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark, the Moses, and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.
The caller number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And like I said, I'm going from everywhere. Boston, NFL, NBA, NHL, I got it all. Even a little MLB, just to see how people feel about certain situations throughout the baseball world, baseball atmosphere. I'm going to throw that out there. I got a dish or two or three baseball to see how everybody feels. But again, y'all already know, sportscitychefs.com, that is the website. Continue to check us out, support us, show the love. And while I get things started here in the kitchen, interesting situation happened last night in the boxing world. So I wish I had Nacho here to see how he felt about the situation, but I'm going to kick this one off. First and foremost, there was a fight last night between Jesse Vargas and Timothy Bradley, and this one went the distance. Now, the backlash that everybody has heard or seen, I actually saw, so it actually looked pretty crazy to me. Bradley was winning the majority of the – well, he actually wins the fight by decision. Let me just no longer leave you in suspense on that situation. Bradley is winning the fight up until the 12th round. It gets late into the 12th, and Vargas lands a vicious hook on Bradley. Now, here goes the interesting thing. Bradley's about to fall, and he's on his horse trying to get away from him. Bradley tries to throw a shot. He misses. He ties Vargas up. The 10-second belt clap claps, and the referee kind of separates these guys, and the ref looks at Vargas and says, "That's it, that's it." Now, there was no bell sound, but the ref thought he heard the bell. Now, interesting enough, Bradley's looking at him like the fight ain't over, and Bradley is hurt, but he's not like, you know, TKO hurt. Like, he can still try and get a shot off, and it looked supremely like an early stoppage, if you will. So the ref goes to the judges and everybody included with the bell situation and basically tells them, I thought I heard the bell, I thought I heard the bell. And they basically confirmed that he thought that he heard the bell, which it was the belt clapping. It wasn't like he was waving Bradley off by TKO, which Vargas thought he won, because once he did that, Vargas started, you know, jumping on the turnbuckle and, you know, cheering at the crowd that he stopped him. And then next thing you know, the decision comes out, and it's a unanimous decision that Bradley wins, which Bradley was winning up until the 12th round, and, you know, one judge had it close at 115-112, but a majority of the judges around the board was only three, but they still had a widespread in favor of Bradley. And if Bradley would have felt, it probably would have gave it an even closer advantage toward Vargas. But the interesting thing about it is, one, I don't know how the ref could mistake a belt clap, which he's been hearing all fight long and basically his career, because he's actually an older referee. And two, I just don't understand how he tried to stop it like that and say the fight is over. And waved, like he waved in the air. It wasn't even like, you know, he just stopped them and just pushed them to the neutral corners and then let it be settled. He basically broke them up, waved his hands like enough from Vargas. So, like it was like Bradley was done. So this is the backlash that a lot of people are speaking on, and talking toward it, and this is heavy in boxing right now. And a lot of people are coming up and saying the ref was, you know, he's in the stages of where he might want to think about retiring. So I'm trying to bring it to the people in the kitchen, and I do have my co-host here calling from the West Coast area. Brian Hughes, welcome to the Brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
What's up, TP? Just joining you in the kitchen. Sorry, I'm a couple minutes late to the party, but I'm definitely ready to talk some sports. I did hear the topic you thrown out there. It's unfortunate, but as you said, you know, the fight was not really that close. Bradley was not hurt to the point where he wasn't defending himself. And there was only 10 seconds left. I think it was an honest mistake. If you look at Russell, the referee, everybody in the industry talks about him as being one of the elite referees in the game. And you know, I really truly believe he made an honest mistake. I know it probably not the way that, you know, Vargas and his fan base feels, but I mean, realistically, with 10 seconds to go, I mean, I understand he hurt him, but I still don't think Vargas is going to win that fight if it goes 10 more seconds.
Now, this is the interesting situation of that, Brian. The shot that he caught him with, he was going to fall, but he didn't. He stayed on his feet and just backpedaled to get away from him, and then he tried to throw a right hook, missed, so he tried to tie him up. Now, in all boxing matches, when a guy is out there on his feet, the other boxer wants to finish him off. He had 10 seconds. Anything could happen in those 10 seconds. 10 seconds are long in boxing. That's like, you're just hoping that you basically can get to survive to get to the bell. And he waved them off like it was a technical knockout, which, you know, rightfully so, with 10 seconds left, you know, percentages that probably favor Bradley to make it to the 10 seconds, but I can still remember a situation, and this is old school boxing in me, where Meldrick Taylor was winning his fight up until the 12th round, and 2 seconds were left on the clock, and Richard Steele waved him off. He basically had the fight won up against Julio Cesar Chavez. He waved him off and basically said he could not continue. This was in the 12th round with 2 seconds left, so anything could happen right there. He could have knocked Bradley out if he was able to finish, because if he'd hit Bradley again in the head area, chin or temple area, he could have dropped him, because Bradley was out there on his feet. That shot took a lot of wind and stamina out of Bradley. So this is where I look at it on the side of Vargas. It's like, I had 10 seconds to finish this fight to knock this guy out, which probably, just like I said, percentages probably didn't weigh in his favor. But now it's like, does he get a rematch? Does the question come around Timothy Bradley? Also with the referee, I think you drew up his name. His name may be Randall. Is this a situation where he does have to start listening closer? Or, you know, I mean, he does have to be protective of both of these boxers and watch everything that these guys do in the ring. But a premature stop in the 12th in a critical time. It wasn't like he stopped it and, you know, these guys are basically just, you know, galloping around the ring. This was a situation where he could have stopped him, and he needed to win by knockout. He had to win by knockout, and he was on the verge of potentially knocking Bradley out, because that shot was a supreme shot that he hit Bradley with.
No, and you know what, like I said, that's a good point. You know, I realize, you know, like you said, anything can happen. You know, once again, it was not close on the scorecards, and I realized Vargas got cheated out of the final 10 seconds to see whether or not, you know, he could have beat Bradley. But, you know, like I said, I think that that's kind of one of the things, you know, that makes sports interesting, if you will. You know, the reason you have a referee in every sport is because there's judgment calls that need to be made that, you know, a computer just can't make. Balls and strikes. You know, is a guy able to continue fighting? What is considered a foul? You know, things like that. That's a human call, and you know what? Anytime you have a human judge, if you will, you leave it open for the possibility of making mistakes. But if you go back and you look at Russell's career, Russell's the referee, like I said, he's widely considered one of the elite referees in the sport of boxing. And his post game or post fight comments was that typically you don't hear the 10 seconds left, that typically you only hear the bell. So when he heard it, because it was really loud in there, he thought it was the bell. And, you know, once again, I understand that that's not going to sit well with a lot of people, but, you know, like I said, I do think it was truly a mistake. You know, sure, you know, Vargas said right after the fight that, you know, he'd like a rematch, and I understand why. But let's be honest, if not for the wild overhand right that connects, I mean, there's really no need for a rematch. Bradley soundly beat him the first 11 rounds, in my opinion. You know, like you said, most of the judges had this like 8-4 in favor of Bradley, and that's giving Vargas the last round. So, you know, I mean, I think that they're basically the referee's mistake enabled Vargas to get another payday. I mean, everybody wants to look at the negative, but I think that Vargas potentially could get another crack at Bradley only because of the mistake that Russell made. Because otherwise, I just don't see the reason. The fight wasn't that close to begin with.
Now, interesting enough, I hope that they do actually channel another rematch, and this, I think, will probably give him more inspiration to go out there and start early, being Jesse Vargas and coming after Bradley instead of, you know, waiting until the middle of the round, middle of the fight to try and bring the onslaught to him and build up his confidence, because there were portions of the fight where, you know, three straight rounds is going to Bradley, and it wasn't like Vargas was, you know, trying to bring pressure. Of course he's out there fighting and trying to bring the game to him, but I really feel like Bradley did dominate the majority of this fight, even though there were some rounds that were given to Vargas. But the way that he finished, and it was like Bradley took it for granted, anything could happen, especially in those last 10 seconds where I think he felt like he got robbed. And it's just tough that he got cleared from the ref, basically waved off to say that the fight is over, no more, and understanding that the ref thought that he heard the bell. So it's like human error, understanding the referee's portion. But then, again, you got to look at it that he has to finish Bradley, and that was his opportunity. At the right time, Bradley got caught, whether he was tired or not, or he got hit on the button and was trying to stay on his feet. Vargas has a legitimate gripe to at least try and get another rematch. So hopefully Bradley does, you know, show interest and make this happen again. And knowing that it's June right now, this will probably happen anywhere in the bird month. I like to call them the bird month, whether it's September, October, November, or December. And I think it'll probably be later on in the year. So these guys could actually heal and get prepared for another fight. But I hope that it does happen within this calendar year. Now, speaking on the word or name, excuse me, of Russell, I want to talk about Russell Wilson, the quarterback from the Seattle Seahawks. I have another Seattle topic, too, but I was going to slip and go the other way, too. But the Seattle Seahawks quarterback claiming that he should be the highest-paid quarterback in football, and he's actually been given an offer, quote-unquote, and he potentially turned it down to wait to see if they come up with something better. But I do want to hear your claim or hear how you see the situation of Russell Wilson. And I know you know a ton about him being a division foe out there in the NFC West, and the weapons that he does have and how he's gotten accustomed to the core, how he is a vicious quarterback piece throughout the NFL. I can't even just say the NFC any longer. He's gotten the back-to-back Super Bowls, been to the NFC Championship a handful of times. There's a ton of things swirling around Russell Wilson in his favor. Do you agree with him? Do you think Seattle, you know, show interest in actually paying this guy the money that he potentially thinks he's worth? Your thoughts on Russell Wilson?
Well, as a football fan, as you mentioned, as a Niners fan, I don't like Russell Wilson all that much. But
right.
As an NFL fan and as a, you know, as an analyst here for Sports City, how can you not appreciate what Russell Wilson does? Okay, you're talking about a guy who's sub 6 foot, a guy who has the highest winning percentage of any starting quarterback over the course of the first 3 years of his career. who does, you know, everybody talks about Tom Brady, you know, doing more with less. Russell Wilson has never had a Pro Bowl anything as a pass catcher. He now has Jimmy Graham. So we look at you know, Golden Tate, who's a good receiver, especially in your offense, in a Detroit's offense. That's the best weapon he's ever had. You look at Curse. You look at some of the guys that they're now using. One of their two starting wide receivers was undrafted. He wasn't even drafted coming out.
Do you consider Percy Harvin at least a part of that situation?
No. Percy Harvin, number one, the 1 year that Percy Harvin was there, Ty, go back and look. He only played half the games they were there. Sure, he helped them win the Super Bowl, but he didn't help them get there. He only played like 7 games that year out of 16. You know, I mean, like I said, he helped them win the Super Bowl, but the bottom line is this. I set the table for this reason. You look at all the influx that Seattle's had, and everybody unanimously will tell you that Seattle's one of the best teams in the NFL. And the reason why they're one of the best teams is because of Russell Wilson. They've had changes along the offensive line. They had Russell Okung go out. Last year they started a rookie right tackle that was selected in round 3 in Jason Britt. They've had all this change amongst the offense, and what does Russell Wilson do? He takes them to back-to-back Super Bowls, and let's be honest, if not for a bonehead call by his coach, he probably wins 2 Super Bowls in 3 years, and in 3 years he's made it to the playoffs 3 times. Mm-hmm. Of course this dude is worth the highest contract ever. He can run, he can pass, he can play action, he can do it all. I mean, he really can, and he's a phenomenal leader. I mean, there's not one team out there that doesn't wish that their quarterback at the age of 24 had the mentality and the drive of Russell Wilson, spent his free time going to children's hospitals and giving back to the community. You never hear this dude ever linked with anything negative, and that is worth something in the NFL. He always makes the right decision on and off the field. He's mature beyond his years, and the bottom line is this, Ty. He said that he wanted a contract slightly larger than Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers got 5 years at $110 million. Joe Flacco got 5 years at $100 million. Cam Newton got 5 years at $100 million. How could you possibly deny this guy $20 extra million than what Cam Newton just got? And Cam's been to the playoffs once in 5 years. How could you possibly deny this guy Joe Flacco money when Joe Flacco has tons of talent around him? I just think that regardless of what Russell Wilson wants, he's proven in 3 short years, he hasn't even developed into the best version of Russell Wilson that we're going to see, Ty, but he's proven that he can already do more with less. So sure, you may have to pay him more money than you want to, and it's less money for other places, but his athletic ability, you may not need 5 first-round picks on the offensive line. You may not need 2 stud wide receivers. You know, so I just say, you know what, you pay him what you need to pay him, because he is the face of the franchise. He is Seattle Seahawks football at this point, because Marshawn Lynch realistically has maybe 2 years left, and that's it. Jimmy Graham's a great player, but he's not – the fan base does not connect with Jimmy Graham as of yet, and the defense is great, but if you think about it, Ty – outside of a couple players named Earl Thomas and Sherman, they keep rotating these players out, you know. So, you know, Clemens was once there, Red Bryant was once there, you know. They keep rotating these guys out. So I think whatever the price tag is Russell Wilson is asking for, once again, I understand that you have to negotiate, but once again, I don't know, maybe it's just my philosophy. I just think that heading into training camp, heading into the season, there's just no way that I want this, A, hanging over my franchise, and B, something that's on the mind of my player, i.e. Dez Bryant, i.e., you know, Russell Wilson. I just give the kid what he wants. If he comes in and says, hey, look, I want to be the highest paid quarterback, period, okay. Aaron Rodgers got $110 million in 5 years. Russell, we love you. We think you're great. Here, I'll give you 5 years at 120. Call it a day.
Now, interesting that you know, you throw a situation out of an interesting piece of that, and now I actually have to, like, branch off of it. You only think that Marshawn only has 2 years left in Seattle or 2 years, period, in the game?
I think he only has 1 or 2 years left, period, Ty. You know, if you look at the comments that Marshawn Lynch has made, he seriously, seriously considered retirement after last year. He wasn't 100% positive that he was going to come back. He's actually saved his money. He's not one of these football players that 3 years from now we're going to hear about him having to file bankruptcy and selling his Super Bowl ring. That's not Marshawn Lynch. That's not the player he is. And he's, you know, he doesn't particularly love the media. He doesn't particularly love some of the rules and regulations that, you know, the NFL imposes. My feeling is if he was contemplating retirement after last year, he's gonna take a beating because Seattle is gonna run the ball a lot. I just think it's inevitable that he probably has a year left. I honestly, truly believe that it's not a talent thing. I just think that he's going to step away from the game after this year, but I'll give him maybe 2 years. But that's why I'm saying I just think that this is Russell Wilson's team. Everybody in that locker room, including Marshawn Lynch, realizes this is Russell Wilson's team. He may be the key cog that makes the engine go. He's the key, but Russell Wilson is the car.
And interesting number two, Marshawn is going into his ninth season. He got picked up in the 2007 draft. And looking at his numbers, I mean, he's been great the last 3 or 4 seasons, especially going to Seattle, getting away from Buffalo. He's close to the 10,000 yard mark, so this is interesting in itself. But I know this will bring an uproar in Sports City to see if he does have more than 2 years left in him, but this is his ninth season. This was actually the year that Barry walked away from the game in his ninth season. So it would be crazy enough if this was his last season in Seattle for all of the sand that he's been able to raise throughout that offense. But that's a very interesting cog and a piece that we could save down the road at Sports City, because I definitely want to revisit this while we could, you know, build the heat in the kitchen. But there was another name or person that you brought up that I do want to discuss. I have on slate for the menu today, and that is Dez Bryant, especially with this contract situation. This is like the days in the life of Dez Bryant, where his agent actually met up with Cowboy officials and front office situation for the first time. Do you think this is going to be an ongoing situation, especially with him, you know, threatening to sit out a couple games if this doesn't get taken care of? Knowing that Dez Bryant is probably the biggest piece of that offense outside of Tony Romo, now that DeMarco is gone, knowing that they're trying to make this happen before the preseason really starts to come around for this Dallas Cowboy team, he needs to be there out there on that field and in training camp and practice and so on and so forth. Is this something that needs to get cleared up now, or this is going to be ongoing and the Cowboys kind of play hardball with Dez Bryant?
Yeah, you know, I've stated all along, Ty, that I feel like this is kind of like a game of chicken where you're driving down the road, Dez Bryant's in one car, Jerry Jones is in the other car, and they're coming towards each other. You know, Dez is like, hey, I'm not going to show up at any of the practices or any team activities until I get a new contract, and I'll hold out. So that's him driving, and, you know, obviously – Jerry Jones has the belief that he doesn't need Dez Bryant. You know, like we heard Chandler say, you know, hey, we have Terrence, we feel pretty good about him. We got Beasley, we feel pretty good about him. The bottom line is, you have a lot of number twos and number threes on your roster right now. You only have one number one receiver. And like I said to you last week, Ty, there is a lot of good receivers in the NFL, but there's only a handful of guys that require a safety to really help the corner, really, really take double coverage. And Dez Bryant is one of those guys. And when you have one of those guys on your team that A, typically is double covered, and B, you can still throw the ball to because he's going to go up and get it, it's a luxury that 90% of the teams in the league don't have. I just don't see any reason or any way that Dallas will allow Dez Bryant to start this year without a contract. I mean, that's my opinion, but I just think, you know, as been stated here in the kitchen before, I think he's too emotional of a player. I don't think they're going to want this hanging over their head. He kind of not, and don't take this the wrong way, Ty. I don't mean this in the perspective of like a crybaby, but he almost reminds me a little bit of how DeSean Jackson would react when the Eagles wouldn't give him a contract. I just think it would be a similar situation. I just think it would loom. I think it would be an ugly situation. And I think ultimately you could lose Dez Bryant even if you offered him a contract if you allowed this to go too long, because then he would feel disrespected. So they have one of the best wide receivers in the game. You allowed DeMarco to go because you felt the key cog in this piece was Dez Bryant. So if that's the case, why would you possibly flirt or play poker or chicken or whatever you want to call it with Dez Bryant? I'd be out there actively saying, you know what, Dez Bryant's one of the best receivers in the league. We value him a whole lot. We really hope we can, you know, get a contract done with him or his agents very soon, because we'd love to have this kid back. Not, well, we have a lot of great receivers out there, and you know what, if he wants to sit out, that would be fine. That's not the attitude to take with this kid.
Now, what if they do come across with not giving him the deal that he likes, he ends up going somewhere else and stays within a division similar to what DeMarco did? Man, not saying that that's something etched in stone, but that was something that Chandler actually introduced, that he think he would probably go to a Redskin team or Eagle team to be alongside DeMarco again, knowing the magic that they did create while they were down there in Dallas. Do you think the situation can present itself, or do you think it's a situation where they're going to end up throwing him the money that he wants, knowing that Dez is, you know, top three receiver in the game? I actually been having an interesting debate with a fellow friend of mine is actually saying that he's the best receiver in the game, but we've been going back and forth, and you know why, outside of Sports City reasons. But do you think this is a situation where they do play that game, or do they actually get this done however long it may take and end up giving him the money that will keep him in Dallas for a good duration of time?
Well, I feel like they're going to pay him because they realize his value. But, you know, as you mentioned, like Chandler said, if he went to any of the teams in his division, Dallas would regret it, because Dallas's defense is not that strong. I think they played well above their head last year. I think their pass defense especially is not that good. Teams that can pass well can shred Dallas still. You know, you look at him, you know, you mentioned Washington, you know, he goes to a team, you know, he goes to a team like the Giants, where you've got Beckham Jr. on one side and you've got, you know, Victor Cruz in the slot. I mean, you can't double team him. That is a recipe for disaster for any team. You put him in Washington on the opposite side of DeSean Jackson, a guy that is a true speed burner, a deep threat. And most teams double cover DeSean Jackson. You can't possibly double both of those guys. So, I mean, there is definitely there is definitely good wide receivers across the board in this division. I don't know if any of the teams would be willing to pay Bryant the type of money he's going to want, because I feel like he's more valuable to Dallas than he would be to any of the other teams in the division. But it would be a horrible decision and a horrible mistake for Dallas. I mean, he's a fantastic talent, Ty. Like you mentioned, a top three receiver in this league. And like I said, my gut feeling, they'll get the deal done before it comes to that. I truly believe that by training camp that we'll have a deal in place.
Okay, I'm going to take this in basically to your doorstep here in Sports City, in the city of L.A., and about the football that you might not like. This is the football that Brian might not like, people, but I want to talk about the Bruins and everything that's gone on in the past week and a half, week or so, out there in L.A., out there in Westwood with Sean P. Diddy. I know him, well, I remember him as Puff Daddy, however you want to do it, Combs, and the altercation that he had with an assistant coach, and basically he, you know, went to jail, and they're trying to drop charges, so on and so forth, but now they are actually dropping Justin from this roster and also removing him from school because of what his father has done. And the basic outlash that came out was the assistant coach that actually got into the altercation with Mr. Combs, said that Justin wasn't putting out, and basically said that he was showing lack of effort. We have all played sports, or we've all been around sports, or so on and so forth, and there's always been a coach that pushes you, regardless if you like it or not, or you feel like you're giving it your all, but the coach knows that your potential is higher than what you're given, and this is probably going to be a landmark in time for Justin's career, or, you know, collegiate career, saying the least bit, of another school trying to entertain the situation of a crazy father. Outside of him being an entrepreneur and all of the money that he has in his pocket, so on and so forth, your thoughts on the potential situation behind Justin now that this has basically occurred between his father and his assistant coach there at UCLA. And there's actually more to the coach's situation. He has a history of rubbing players the wrong way, just to say the least. He actually even had an incident with Darrell Revis before. So he has a resume of you know, spouting at players the wrong way. But regardless of the situation, you know, it's kind of like Puffy shouldn't have been there, especially if this is a practice situation. But your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, this is a story that's gotten quite a bit of attention in the local sports section here in Los Angeles and Southern California area. And I don't know, you know, how many of the listeners or yourself listen to XM Radio, but former head coach Rick Neuheisel went on Sirius Radio, and he actually confessed that the reason why Justin made the team was because of his dad. It wasn't because of his talent. It was because of his dad and what potentially his dad could do to help the university and help the football team in particular. And I mean, he was straight out asked on Sirius Radio, College Sports Sirius Radio, well, would he have made the team if his dad was not, you know, P. Diddy? And he said no. Actually, take that back. What he said was it would be doubtful. So, I mean, am I surprised? Not really, because, you know, this was something that aired a few days ago. And, you know, if you think about the media storm that's going to follow, coupled with the fact that the kid never had the talent really to play at this level to begin with. He, you know, unlike Snoop's son, if you will, he really was just there because, you know, dad bought his way, if you will. And so, I mean, it's a tough story to hear especially for those kids that maybe had hopes or aspirations of going to UCLA and, you know, they were passed over because, you know, they went in Justin Combs' direction. But, I mean, this really is a story tie of somebody getting something for nothing, which is he got a, you know, he got a full ride to scholarship to UCLA, and hopefully he's taking advantage of the education, but really has very little shot of ever doing anything at UCLA because he just doesn't have the talent.
Now, this is an interesting situation because there could be players or kids that are in the California area that dream of going to, you know, UCLA and playing in Westwood in front of, you know, a historic, legendary school, and were basically turned away because there's a kid there that knew Heisel, basically just admitted that he wouldn't have been there if money didn't talk, because that's the literal situation that I'm looking at, especially hearing from what you throw out from here, from the statement he made on SiriusXM. That is nowhere near fair, but I do understand that that's the way of America or the way of the world. But how does it entertain UCLA, which you have a big booster that's going to be there for what, 4 years, and then probably going to pull his you know, liking toward the situation away once Justin's out of school, you know. So it's a very unfortunate situation, especially him being a second-string corner. He's not a starter. And if they're saying that he didn't really have the potential to be there, I mean, you basically sold this kid short. He actually thinks that he has the capability to go out there and ball with these guys. But also, you basically probably turned away a bunch of players that can play and probably helped on the defensive side of the ball, where UCLA actually played interesting ball last season for this respective university. Yeah.
I was just going to tell you, I actually found one of the excerpts from that XM radio, because I remember reading something about this, I think yesterday or the day before. So I have an actual excerpt. So the actual question was, what was the process that was involved when you were recruiting Sean Combs, and did you weigh in the fact, what factors do you weigh in? Neuheisel, former coach of the UCLA Bruins, says, quote, when you're weighing the assets of what a youngster can do for your program, there's no question that being Diddy's son had something to do with it for me. I did recruit Justin Combs and Sean Combs as his father. So, obviously, the arrest, the arrest is what instigated this. But I think just merely the fact that, someone got recruited not based on talent, but based off of who they know, I think that this is the type of thing that everyone dreads. You know, we all know that that the world is not equal and not a bright, shiny place. But in athletics, we always feel like, regardless of where you're from or how much your parents make or you know, what side of the tracks you come from, play hard and you're the best, that you're going to rise to the top. And unfortunately, this is just one of those reality checks that where you get smacked in the face and realize that may not be the truth. Ty, you there?
Well, I'm sorry, I actually had it muted because I was actually looking for this situation. My fault. So basically, it's a situation where a lot of people were overlooked due to the fact that, you know, his father is who he is at the end of the day. And it's tough that, you know, a coach is removed from the situation and he's going to spill out the truth now about the whole ordeal at the end of the day. And it's unfortunate because, like I said, there could be kids that could have been talented or better for that position at the corner, because he plays the cornerback position. And he's an undersized corner at 5'9", and I just don't feel him being a shutdown type of guy. He hasn't even literally given the opportunity to make change to the UCLA team. And I agree with the pieces like Snoop's son and the potential that he brings to the table. At least Snoop's son was actually considered as one of the top receivers in the nation, coming out of high school. I mean, Justin's situation is more or less looking like a big eye situation for UCLA to basically try to soak up you know, as much as they could in a 4-year span while Justin was there. And that's very unfortunate, especially if these guys do decline, and especially in the Pac-12 where it's offense heavy, where these guys aren't playing strong defense in the Pac-12. There's nobody locking anybody up. These teams are averaging over, let's just say, 24, 27 points a game, you know, legitimately throughout the conference. So it's tough. It is a very tough situation, especially in L.A. Hey, anything else before we get away from the UCLA bit?
Nah, I'm ready to move on.
Okay, so the backlash from the NBA draft, I want to see how you feel about the situation from multiple teams throughout the league, and also from your respective team that you love, the L.A. Lakers, with them going with D'Angelo Russell and also picking up Larry Nance Jr. Now, Larry Nance Jr., 3 years ago while in college, was talking junk about Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant has initially gone out and spoke to the kid, and they basically said that this is now water under the bridge, but he had a very interesting statement to make toward Kobe. Your thoughts on the NBA draft, and also speak along the terms of your team and what the Lakers are up to moving forward. You know, Okafor, and knowing that a lot of people are talking about the Knicks and the Porzingis pick, 7-foot-1 guy out of Latvia. Your thoughts on the backlash now that we've got to soak it all in of the NBA draft being over?
Yeah, well, the NBA draft was really great. I watched about 85% of it, Ty. I did have some work that I was doing in between picks, but you know, kudos to a couple teams, and I think most of these teams are teams that you're probably already aware of, Ty, but for the average fan, I really, really liked what – let's start off with what Minnesota did and Flip Saunders. I think it's so easy to have the number one pick and to jack it up, if you will, when there's not a clear, definitive number one guy. They could have gotten cute and taken a guard. They could have taken Okafor. I think we all agree this is something that we've talked about here on Sports City for the better part of the last couple months, that Karl-Anthony Towns was clearly the number one player, the most versatile player, the higher upside big man. He's got a better defensive prowess, which is really what Minnesota needed as far as a rim protector. So I give him a ton of credit. And I love what my Lakers did. You know, I've been saying since the beginning, I wasn't a big Okafor fan. You know, I really thought that we needed a guard that can defend and shoot threes, that can space the floor, that can handle the load, if you will, and help us defend some of these unbelievable talents at the point guard position in the Western Conference. So I give the Lakers a ton of credit, and I think it also signals the fact that the Lakers feel very confident in their ability to land, you know, an Aldridge, a Kevin Love, a Marc Gasol, you know, one of these big guys that will come in right away and be a starter for us. So, you know, there's still rumblings here in L.A. that, you know, the Lakers are working on a deal to try and land DeMarcus Cousins, which would just be over the moon great. But you know, we'll see what happens. But you know, I gotta tell you, Ty, and I'm sure you feel this way. I know a lot of people on ESPN have actually given them credit, but I gotta tell you, I know Porzingis has a ton of upside, but I don't know if that pick makes a ton of sense for me, and I gotta tell you why. We all know that Dolan's really bad about, you know, shutting the door very quickly. You know, he didn't give, you know, when you look at previous regimes, previous coaches, Isaiah Thomas and what was the last coach that was there before Fisher?
With the Knicks is Woodson.
Woodson, right. I want to say Wooden, but I knew it wasn't that. Woodson, thank you. But, you know, he did a pretty good job, but, you know, they pulled the plug on him. I just think that Porzingis is going to take too long to develop. I think Carmelo Anthony is right. You know, I think that this is a team that's – I feel like this is a team in full rebuild mode right now. You know, you trade away, you know, Hardaway Jr. for a kid who's a really, really good guard. You know, a lot of people are saying, hey, look, you know, I've heard people say as high as, you know, I think he's the third best point guard in this draft. So, I mean, they have some really high upside players, but high ceiling players, but a lot of these guys are going to take some time to develop, and I just don't know if Phil's going to be around for that development or Derek Fisher's going to be around for that development. It seems like every year in the draft, the rich get richer. Spurs continue to draft foreign players, and Miami and Pat Riley, you know, they pick up Justin Winslow at number 10, and realistically, he should have been a lottery pick. He's a great player. So, I mean, there's a ton of reasons to be optimistic if you're an NBA fan. The one pick, and I don't typically bash teams because I understand you know, you kind of have to do what you have to do, Ty, but I got to be honest, the one pick that I don't get is I really didn't understand Okafor to the 76ers. I mean, you look at that roster, they already have Joel Embiid. They already have exactly. So they've drafted a big man in each of the last three drafts, and I understand that you could make an argument that Okafor is more talented than these guys, but you still have three moving pieces, three top five picks that are stuck on your roster. Embiid and the other kids' value is basically next to nothing because these kids haven't shown anything due to injury or lack of playing time. I just don't get it. I mean, I would have taken Moutier if I was them. At least he gives you the kind of the facilitator that you need. Or if they wanted to go Porzingis, if they were looking more long-term build. I don't know. But overall, Ty, I thought the draft was great. It was nice to see some teams kind of switch it up. But I can tell you that the fans here in Los Angeles are very, very excited. I think Russell's exactly what we needed. You know, even going back to the championship years, I mean, Derek Fisher's a great player, but I wouldn't consider him an elite point guard. And so he was a clutch shooter. He was a good player, never a plus defender. But the Lakers have not had a great point guard in a really, really long time. I mean, you could even go back to Magic era before we had an elite point guard. So it's nice that we have an opportunity to maybe have that guy. So I'm excited about that. What was your thoughts on the draft?
Well, overall, this draft, it had a lot of highs. And I think the one thing is swirling around the New York Knicks situation, which I'm going to get to in a minute. We do have Nacho in the building. Nacho, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling good. Good morning, y'all. How you doing?
Doing all right. Now looking at the situation for the Lakers, if you will, they needed an interesting pickup at the guard, but now it looks like, okay, so now what do they do with, you know, Jeremy Lin or, you know, Clarkson, if Jordan is going to be a guy that's going to the bench? Like, they're going to have a point guard position battle until Kobe starts the clock out. And then Kobe's actually making statements that saying that this may not be his last season in the NBA, because I think that now that they have pieces, I think that he wants to stick around and try to see how far he could help push his Lakers team before he ends up leaving the game. But they're actually getting Julius Randle back, the big man from Kentucky that was out all season long due to a knee fracture, if I'm not mistaken. Depending on what they're going to do with Boozer in the Pain and also with Jordan Hill, I think the Kevin Love situation, you could pop that dream cloud, I'm going to get to in a minute. But the Jahlil Okafor pick is very questionable with the Sixers. Also, I think that Jahlil is definitely a top-notch big man coming out of college, but it wasn't like they needed a big because of all of the big that they have, including just looking at Embiid and Noel. There's other bigs that are on that team, respectively, that are on the bench. So you're big man heavy, and you have a bunch of point guards that don't really, you know, pop off the charts of people, and you got rid of your rookie of the year point guard from just two years ago with Michael Carter Williams out of Syracuse. You still haven't filled that void at the point guard position, which is very questionable for Philadelphia. But the pickup for the Knicks and looking at Porzingis being a 7'1", 220-pound guy. He's thin. I think his advantage is that he can step out and shoot. It's going to be hard to, like, kind of, you know, block his shot or derail him from that. But he could get pushed around. He's going to be at the small forward or power forward position if he's going to step out and play like that. But you got another 7-footer that lingers around the three-point area in Andre Bargnani. So you brought him, along with Bargnani on that team, and Carmelo, where all of them are going to be around the perimeter. Who's going to be in the paint? That's the questionable situation I'm looking at with the Knicks. And, of course, they got Grant to come in there. So, you know, that's a big pickup. But they're moving Tim Hardaway Jr. I think he was just getting started. And it was a situation that Carmelo's not even happy about the move for them to get rid of Hardaway Jr. And at first, Carmelo was like, you know, he doesn't like the pickup of Porzingis. Now he's saying that we'll see what he's all about, so on and so forth. I think the Knicks basically shot themselves in the foot. And this could actually turn out to be a good move or blessing in disguise down the road and be a 2 to 4 year project. But I don't think he just comes into the league at 19 years old, 7'1", 220, and, you know, the prowess is that he wants to stay around outside and shoot jumpers. And his defense will definitely be in question because I think people will be able to have their way with him and get him in foul trouble because he has to learn the American game also. I think he's going to be down the road, potentially another Dirk Nowitzki. And you have an aging Carmelo Anthony, which Carmelo's, what, 30, 31 years old right now. I mean, how long do you think you have Carmelo of his glory years here with the New York Knicks? There's a ton of questions behind that Knicks pick. The Heat, like you said, with Justice Winslow, him and Dwayne Wade, if they can make that happen and keep that core together, it'll be interesting. But a lot of people are saying that they think Dwayne Wade is out of there, especially with his father wearing a Cleveland Cavaliers shirt, so on and so forth, but I doubt that. Nacho, we got you here. I want to hear how you feel about the aftermath after the draft is finished.
You know, on the head, the one thing I want to touch on, obviously, later on down the line in the list, number 13, my Phoenix Suns picked Devin Booker. And then we picked Andrew Harrison just to trade to get another player, L-E-U-R. I can't say his name, you know, Lure or whatever. You made an interesting point there. The Phillies got, you know, too many big men and not enough guards. Well, we got the opposite. We got too many guards and not enough big men. So I think Phoenix and Philadelphia need to get on the damn phone and figure out what to do and make some trades happen because I'm tired of having no big men. And, you know, we're also trying to deal Eric Bledsoe. And I know Phoenix has said it's going to take a lot, but I don't think it'll take a lot if you include a big man in the deal. So I think Philly and Phoenix should get on the phone and try and figure something out. As it pertains to the top end of the draft, you know, 1 through 3, one, obviously, the slam dunk pick that Minnesota did what they needed to do and picked the guy that was perfect. And number two, I don't know how you deal with this because you know you're not going to get Kobe for 40 games at least. Kobe's not going to be the same. He hasn't played a full season in God knows how long. So we know Kobe's not going to be there all season. So I don't know how you feel about putting all the onus on Russell to win you games this year. I know you guys got Randall coming back and things like that. So I just, you know, I'm a little skeptical. I think a big man might have helped you out, but like I said, I don't know necessarily how I feel about the Russell pick, putting all the onus on him, especially if Kobe has done what he's done the past couple of years and missed almost half a season. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Lakers deal with that and how Russell, you know, turns out to be a player in this league. That's one player I'm definitely interested to see. You know, he had a lot of hype going into the draft, how good of a basketball skill player he was, the best in the draft. A lot of people were saying the big thing was this is the draft. You don't take a guard over a big man when you have the opportunity to get a big man. That's what everyone is preaching before the draft, and the Lakers just, you know, snubbed that theory. So it's just going to be very interesting. It's a team that I totally don't like and despise in the L.A. Lakers, but I am interested in, for the sport of basketball to see what they put out on the court. The Sixers with Okafor, again, like I said, they need to figure out a way to get a hold of Phoenix, maybe get some guard play from us. We'll get some big man from them, something. I just need some big man help over here, and I'm sure they would like a guard that can play out there. So, also with the Knicks, you guys hit it on the head. I don't know anything about Porzingis. It's pretty much like anyone else. So I'm just going to have to, you know, wait and see. But, you know, the Knicks in misery is always good for me because I could care less.
Okay. And what about you with the Phoenix Suns, with them going with another guard again? It's like they want to load this team up guard after guard after guard. Now they got a shooter out of Kentucky. Your thoughts on the pick that they got at 13, if I'm not mistaken, for the Phoenix Suns?
Yeah. I like the pick. I do like them. Booker as a player, we got the shooter we need. We had a problem, like I said, with a lot of buzzer beaters, a lot of clubs where I think I don't know what we're doing. I don't know if we're just backing to figure out to work and then deal the rest. Like I said, we already know Eric goes on the table. He's on the trade block. Phoenix has said it's going to take a lot, but like I said, I think if you throw in a big man, it might not take so much. But I don't know. I really don't know. I don't understand. I don't know if we're looking for the second coming of Steve Nash or if whatever we're doing when it comes to the guard play. We need to continue to pick up guards, whether it be trades or in the draft. We just continue to do it. So I just don't know. We definitely do need a big man, you know, especially with the off-the-court issues with the Morris twins. Definitely need some help down low and some shooting. So I do like the pick. However, you know, at 13, you know, what was really out there in the way of big men, I didn't really see any. I really like it. It's just going to have to see how we play out. But I really don't understand the multiple guard. I guess we're doing the opposite of what, like I said, what Philly's doing. They're loading up on big men. We're loading up. It's perfect sense that they should call each other. But I just don't understand why we're doing it. I don't get it. And it's not like we have conference. I don't even think we're eighth on Friday. So it's pretty hard.
Okay, we're getting hiccups in the line that you have. But interesting enough, just like you said, you guys need to call each other. You guys are picking up more guards in a big man-led conference in the Western Conference, and they're picking up more big men in a guard-led Eastern Conference. So something has to give and mix this up. The Suns have 5 to 6 legitimate guards, whether it's point or shooting guard. So I think that they need to fill the void and the paint as much as possible. And like I said before, Philadelphia, they're intrigued at the point guard position. They don't really have a floor general. At the end of the day, so I'm questioning what these guys are going to look like as time goes on. Now, looking at the situation that Brian threw out there was with the Kevin Love ordeal, Kevin Love has just made a statement to the Cleveland Cavaliers saying that he is coming back next year. So, you know, throwing all of that by the wayside, that he may go back home to Oregon, because a lot of people think he's from California. He's from Oregon, but he went to school in L.A., you know, and potentially if LaMarcus is to walk away, but they just got Plumlee from the Brooklyn Nets in a four-player deal too. So that's interesting in itself that they do have a legit big man in Plumlee, because I like Plumlee, even though I don't like Duke, but I do like Plumlee. So I think they're prepared on, you know, having him either behind LaMarcus or playing with LaMarcus or is waiting to see how LaMarcus weighs this situation. Now, that's one thing, but the Kevin Love situation, which I know on the Crossover Cafe, a lot of them are tired of hearing about Kevin Love because they just don't respect him. I'm the only one that actually gives him credit for what he's done in previous seasons. This year was so injury-riddled, we didn't really get to see too much of what Kevin Love could bring to this team. But he's actually stating that he's coming back to Cleveland, and I think to fight the fight with LeBron and Kyrie Irving, and knowing Kyrie's coming off of a fractured kneecap, and knowing that Kevin Love, I mean, from his back to a separated shoulder, I mean, there's so many interesting pieces around Kevin Love. Your thoughts on Kevin Love, now that the fact that he's made this statement, Brian, that he's trying to come back to Cleveland to get this thing done and at least give it its full go in a full NBA season?
And you know what? I mean, it makes sense for Kevin Love, you know, to go back for a couple reasons. Number one, you know, he said he wanted to go to a team that contended. He was tired of being in Minnesota and being on a team that couldn't contend. So if he goes back, you know, like I said, that's fine. That's good for him. I'm just telling you, I believe in the Lakers front office. Mitch Kupchak has proven in the past to be very, very good at finding talent. I mean, Jordan Clarkson is a great example. You know what? Potential rookie of the year candidate last year that we selected in the second round. He's very, very good at finding the quote-unquote hidden gems, and he's always been very, very good at free agency and picking up quality free agents. You know, like I said, it could be Aldridge, it could be Gasol, it could be, you know, insert name here. But, you know, I respect Nacho's opinion, but I think the reason why they went with Russell is because with $60 million in cap space, they realize we're going to be able to get a big man to fill the center, one that not only has offensive skills, but one that can actually play a little bit of defense. The NBA is going to a small ball, you know, small player, small ball game. You know, there's a reason why the Golden State Warriors won the series. It's because they can spread the floor, and from player one through five, they can all shoot three-pointers. Iguodala, Green, Thompson, Curry, every single one of the guys that were out there would step back from on occasion and make a three-pointer. You have to be able to make people defend, you know, the entire floor, not just underneath the rim, not cluster underneath the rim. So, once again, I think you're going to see a lot of teams going to a more spaced look. You know, that's the reason why when I look at picks like, you know, the Porzingis pick, I don't bash it quite as much. I just think he takes too long to develop. You know, for your Phoenix Suns, Nacho, I love the pick. I actually think it was one of the better picks outside the top 10. You know, usually your top 5 to 8 guys are usually locks. They're guys that are going to contribute. They're good players. It's kind of like the NFL draft. It's hard to give a team a great grade when they have the number one overall pick or give them a bad grade because they're getting the best player in the draft. But I think Booker's a phenomenal player. He's real high IQ. He's a guy that is going to be able to knock down three-pointers. He's going to come in right away, and he's going to contribute off the bench, which is really what you guys need. You need a consistent shooter that can come in and really help out in that department, and I think he's that guy. He's going to be a lot cheaper for you than Green was, and he's probably more consistent. So he's going to come in. He's going to be a great fit off the bench. He's a high IQ guy, like I said, and he's a guy that, you know, he's never going to wow you with his athleticism, but he's smart. And because he's smart, he'll stay in the league a long time.
Hey, real quick, do you think, and this is for both of you, and I know you're the Lakers fan, and maybe this is pertaining to basketball more than just the Lakers, but do you think that the Lakers would rather deal with the rookie woes of a guard than a big man? Is that why they went guard? They would rather deal because they can go get a big man who, like you said, with experience in the league, they don't have to deal with those rookie woes. As where with the guard, it's not as impactful in the game. I don't know the game as much as well as you two. So you think that was the thought process of taking Russell over Okafor? You know you can get a big man with experience, and you can just deal with the rookie woes at the guard position. Whereas you know down low, you can really impact the game.
Well, I'll say this, and I'll let Ty chime in as well. I think unless you have a clear cut slam dunk, this guy is the best guy. Like, clearly, this is the best player. Unless you have that, you have to consider what options you have available in free agency. Once again, they're going to have $60 million in cap space. So that's something that has to be taken into consideration. When you look at the free agent market, there is no impact, young impact, elite point guards. They just do not hit the market. It is not often that you see a Chris Paul hit the market. And when he did, the Lakers went after him and should have had him, but the league decided that they didn't want the Lakers to have Chris Paul. It just doesn't happen that often. And I think because there is such a scarcity, if you will, for NBA elite, not just good, but elite point guards, I think, you know, in a league that everybody talks about taking the big man over the little guy, I think secretly, behind closed doors, I think if you have a point guard and a big man that are both equally skilled, I think most teams would probably go for the point guard. If you need a facilitator, if you need a guy to run your team, that's the guy that's touching the ball. He's like your quarterback. That's the guy that's touching the ball 70% of the clock, 70% of the shot clock. He's facilitating for the other players because the big man cannot dribble it down the court and set up his own shot. That's the reason why I didn't want Okafor. We already have an isolation guy in Julius Randle. He's a great player. I'm looking forward to having him back. But we didn't need two guys down on the low block with their hand up because they can't run around the floor or make a shot from outside 15 feet. So I appreciated the fact that we went with a guard, but that's my opinion. I think that everybody wants to say the big man is the most important piece, but I think secretly point guard is the most important piece. The NBA is changing. I think it's easier to find elite big men in free agency than it is to find an elite point guard. Ty, what's your thoughts?
I think they were actually set at point guard with Jordan Clarkson, but I don't think this is a bad pickup with D'Angelo Russell because he is a top-notch player. He's one of the guys outside of Kobe where the defense is going to try and draw to Kobe, even though Kobe's aging, and we're not going to see the same Kobe that's going to come out and dump out 28, 27 points a game, but you still got to worry about what Kobe can do on the basketball floor, that's for sure. But if they're actually playing close on Kobe, you got a guy that has big shot capability at the point guard position. But the way Jordan Clarkson was coming on strong in this past season right now, making a name for himself, it's like, why go away from him? Now, looking at the big men that they have now, let's go. Tariq Black, who barely gets time. Jordan Hill, injury-prone and barely on the floor and doesn't really know his identity, whether if he wants to shoot jump shots or linger around the rim and be an underprivileged garbage man at the end of the day, because that's what he is to me if he's under the rim. He's not down there, you know, begging for the ball on the block. He either wants to step out and hit a 12- or 11-foot jump shot or be fortunate to get a rebound and a putback. And last but not least, Robert Sacre. I mean, I don't know how much I can say about this guy other than, you know, he wears a Laker jersey and he's a big guy at the end of the day, but he does not produce heavily like they thought he would when he was coming out of college with Gonzaga. He's not the piece that they
wanted. I wish you wouldn't have even mentioned that last name.
I'm sorry. But he's one of the big men here. And
Wait, hold on.
You told me to look at this Laker team. This is what
Okay, go ahead, man. I was going to say, you at least gave us some credit. You mentioned Julius Randle as a rebounder.
Hold on. We'll get there. I'm cooking now. Now, between those three centers, I would choose Jahlil Okafor over all three of them. I'm sorry. I can pick Black, even though Tariq did work while he was in college. He did not prove himself as much as possible in the NBA. Jordan Hill, in the words of the old dirty bastard, off on a natural charge, bon voyage. I will send you somewhere else. I would not want to see you in a Laker jersey, especially the way that he showed himself, you know, after the games with him and Swaggy P, a.k.a. Nick Young. These guys are nowhere near mature, and Jordan Hill's been in the game for a good amount of time. Going from New York and L.A., he's not grown up or changed, but he's getting paid a handsome amount with his Laker team right now. And the name that he doesn't want me to say, I won't say it again. He's basically a glorified cheerleader to me. Sacre does not produce anything for his Lakers roster. So, like I said, they had guards and the quality to be outside of Kobe Bryant. They have not had Kobe for the last three doggone seasons. Kobe has not played ball for this team for the last 3 years. Like, he's been out with a fractured leg, been out with the Achilles, been out with the rotator cuff situation. Like, you're not even giving them time to gel with the other guards. Now you're bringing a rookie guard that has to get accustomed to Kobe, calling his team Cottonelle, soft as toilet paper, so on and so forth. So it's questionable, but I'm not mad at the pick because the point guard is phenomenal. But he's young, and he's going to have to more or less fess up to giving Kobe the ball whenever Kobe wants it. Now you can go, Brian.
No, all I was going to say is I wanted you – you know, when I think of big men, especially rebounding, he may not be as tall, but I'll put Jordan Hill in there because he does do work on the glass. But Randle is twice the rebounder of Sacre and Black. Like, why are you even mentioning those guys? I take him with the broken leg, just wheel him out onto the court and let him get rebounds. But You know, I just want you to quickly touch before we move. Like I said, you know, the main reason, is, as I mentioned, I think you go skill position or point guard. I think it's easier to find a big man, whether it's a rebounding specialist or a big man with skill, than it is to find a point guard. And this free agency period is one of the, you know, it's just another, you know, another way of proving that. There is a lot of talented big guys. There is not a lot of skilled point guards that are going to be available. And you know, Riley's already said that he wants Wade to finish his career in Miami. I don't think there's any way that that Dwayne Wade is leaving Miami. He's staying, period.
Now, this is where I beg to differ in this situation. How is it easy to find a point guard? That's how you said it? A point guard comparable to a big man, right?
No, I said it's easier to find. It's easier to find quality big men in free agency than it is to find a quality point guard.
Okay, but they one, have to be interested in going to play alongside Kobe. That is the key cog in a situation being a big. And two, the quality big men that you're looking for, i.e. DeMarcus or LaMarcus, and it's funny that it goes like that, L.A. or D.E., regardless of the situation, is what they're trying to bring into L.A. It is not that simple of a situation where they were already proven at the point guard position. Jordan Clarkson, while Kobe was out, was holding this team down. It was not Nick Young. Nick Young was out for a duration of time also. He was actually doing work and putting up a lot of pressure up against a lot of the point guards in the Western Conference. And you got to get a big, whether it's in free agency or not, to accommodate themselves in the Western Conference, where every game that they're playing, they're going up against an all-star caliber power forward or a big at the end of the day. They're going up against Blake. They're going up against, oh, my goodness, I'm drawing a blank, on the DeAndre Jordan out there in L.A. with the Clippers, or LaMarcus if he is to stay in Portland, or Tim Duggan. I mean, he still has a year left. I mean, and whenever Tim Duggan clocks out, it doesn't look like he's looking terrible. It's not like Tim is averaging 12 points a game. You still got to defend Tim. Like, there's big all across that Western Conference that these guys, whether young or coming through free agency, have to keep their chin up and not get buried by a guy that's going to give them 20 or 10 on a nightly basis. You still got Dwight Howard, even though a lot of people talk junk about him, including us in Sports City, but Dwight is an all-star center and they can still get you 20 and 10. And I think it's better that they should have went with a big and been happy with the points that they have. I mean, Jordan Clarkson is a good point guard. A lot of people don't like Jeremy Lin, but Jeremy Lin has big shot capability when he's on. That just has to be consistent. He's not consistent. And that's the knock on Jeremy Lin. When he was in New York, it was a different situation, and he got injured. I think once he started moving, when he went to Houston, when he went to L.A., that's when everything started happening to Jeremy Lin. But like I said, I think the Lakers were fine at the backcourt position. I think they needed to go inside, and that's where Kobe drew up. They were soft as toilet paper because their bigs weren't in there banging. And let's just look at the numbers for Jordan Hill right now. Jordan Hill averaged 7 rebounds a game this year for the Lakers, right? And that's because they were injured at the big man position. If they weren't injured, he would not have those numbers. Carlos Boozer was out for a duration of the season. You got Julius Randle that missed time this season. They got rid of Powell as well. They were in flux and making things happen. And I think once Julius Randle comes back, these numbers are going to go down. His career average, he averages 5 rebounds a game. I'm not giving Jordan Hill that edge at all. At all. He was fortunate to average the number that he had this year because they had no choice, no way to go, but to look to him and be like, you got to go in next man up situation. That's why I say that about at least Jordan Hill.
Let me just quickly say this before we move away from basketball, because I know we only got about 10 minutes left. I still defend the Lakers' choice. I think it was the right pick for several reasons. Number one, as you guys mentioned, Kobe Bryant has been a partial contributor now for 3 years. You need scorers. You need scorers, and you need to be able to defend. The game is played on two ends of the court, and no matter how skilled you are on the offensive end, if you're a revolving door at the defensive end, and let's be honest, that's what Okafor is. You're going to put him down there against Dwight Howard, that guy you just talked about, or even a power forward with some strength like Blake Griffin and expect him to defend? He couldn't defend guys that didn't get drafted in college. That's not his forte. I'll take a player that that plays on both sides of the court any day of the week, and I'll tell you right now, as a Lakers fan, I don't think the Lakers are going to bring Kobe Bryant back. If he wants to play, it's going to be super cheap, super cheap. This is the last big year of money that Kobe Bryant is going to see from the Lakers. The Lakers have already mentally moved on. Our backcourt is Jordan Clarkson is going to be the shooting guard, and Russell will be the point guard. And as great as Clarkson was last year, make no mistake about it, Russell is twice as talented as Clarkson is right now. You're talking about a kid that shoots over 42% from three-point range. He's a skilled passer, and he's only 19 years old. That is your backcourt moving forward, is Clarkson as the two, Russell as the one. Now the Lakers finally have a backcourt that might be able to do something. And like I said, if we get a DeMarcus Cousins, if we get an Aldridge, if we get that other piece in the center, you know, we're still not the best team in the NBA, but we'll make the playoffs, which is really what the Lakers should be doing every single year.
Dude, they should be doing that every year. Oh, goodness. Stop. This is the New York coming out. I mean the Laker fan coming out of him that they should be making. The Western Conference is loaded, you know. Kobe will be 37 this August. So,
last year.
No, I'm talking about, well, this year right here. I mean, he's approaching 37. So even in last year, if he was to play and the role that he was on to, I mean, do you think, okay, if Kobe was there all season, do you think the Lakers would have made the playoffs this year?
No, absolutely not. Oh. Even I think, and Ty, I think you know this just by watching the game, I think Kobe being injured, and this, you know, once again, I never wish injury on anybody. I love the Black Mamba. He's one of my favorite all-time players. I think he plays with a lot of heart and passion that a lot of guys just lack. But I don't think Jordan Clarkson develops the way that he did if Kobe Bryant is healthy all year. So I think that was instrumental in his development. He had to basically take the onus on himself. And I think that was big. But if you're asking me right now, do I think that Mitch Kupchak, which I believe is one of the best GMs in all of sports, but especially basketball, do I think that he's going to be willing to pay Kobe Bryant another hefty salary just because we have cap space to keep him on the team? I think the answer is no. I think you're going to even see this year, guys, if Kobe Bryant is healthy, let's say he stays healthy, you're not going to see Kobe Bryant play 35, 40 minutes. I think you're probably going to see it more like a 30-minute a game type deal, and you're going to see Clarkson's minutes and Russell's minutes fill in accordingly. Kobe Bryant is not going to be playing 40-plus minutes a game like we've seen in the past. So you're going to see these younger guys get an opportunity to compete and contribute, you know, including Randle, because he was really robbed of his rookie year. Like I said, I think this all hinges on what I said, which is free agency, but I'm confident that the Lakers can land a premier big-time big man to help in the middle. If it's Cousins, I'll do backflips. I know everybody thinks he's a bad guy, but I think he's one of the most skilled big men in all of the game. And it'd be nice for him to be in a major market so people could actually appreciate this kid for the skills he has.
But no love for Robert Sacre at all.
No. They can have the cheerleader. I think he'd look good in purple. Purple and black.
Oh, man, the call is over.
I'll throw him in as part of the deal for him.
You put him in the cheerleader suit. I'm not trying to see him ball like – he's actually a 7-footer that blows layups. Like, if you're 7 feet, there's no way that you should not be dunking the ball. Don't get me started on this guy. And this is what Kupchak and company overlook. They're content right now if they don't get DeMarcus or LaMarcus that Sacree, Hill, and Black get it done in the paint. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. Julius Randle, possibly. Boozer, depending on what Boozer they get, and if Boozer is healthy throughout the season, then okay, fine. But Boozer, I'm so questionable on Boozer, it's not even funny. If you listen to me, especially in the cafe, I call Boozer out almost every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, I got to give Boozer a call. But I respect him. I mean, he did his work throughout the NBA, but his time has come too. I think they could have, you know, built on trying to bring another big in there throughout the draft. But that's just me. That's just me. But I'm not saying that it's a bad pick for them to get D'Angelo Russell, because this guy has big shot capability, and I think that is going to be something they're going to have to build off of. And i.e., if we're looking at it from Kobe's perspective, even if he had to go outside the season and play another season and the Lakers give him a deal that he likes, I mean, okay, 2 years, Kobe's there, and then what? Kobe leaves and they have a void at the shooting guard position. One of those guys is going to have to be the trigger man, and to me, it is not Nick Young at the end of the day. I mean, yeah, he can knock down threes. He said he's the best three-point shooter in the game. Yeah, give me a break. But still, yeah, somebody's got to pick up that slack while Kobe is getting ready to depart. Okay, anything else towards at least portion of the draft situation or the Lakers or any other team that they draw questions toward? Throughout this draft, the Boston Celtics with the selection of R.J. Hunter and how his father, you know, basically stated the claim for his son throughout this NCAA tournament. I think that was one of more of my uplifting situations of seeing this guy get drafted out of Georgia State. I don't really see too many players coming out of Georgia State coming to the NBA, so that was a great pick for me. I definitely am happy for his father, Coach Hunter, down there in Georgia State. But anything else before we get away from it? Okay, that helps me. The silent helps me. I had a whole bunch of other stuff that I wrote out just in case the show didn't carry long. I had baseball dishes. The Dodgers and the Giants are one game difference separates them, and the Giants are still within that conversation of being in the NL West lead. I had the Seattle Mariners and put question marks around it and how these guys are under 500 with the pieces that they have there. A lot of people thought that they would actually be within the race in the NL West, especially with King Felix actually re-signing that big King ransom, and things aren't changing. It's like, did people want him to stay there, or should he have moved and been a part of a big-time piece somewhere else? It doesn't look like anything is going to change with the Seattle Mariners. I wanted to see how you guys felt about that. I will go to the Dodger-Giants situation since you are there, Brian, even though you're more of a Angel guy. Your thoughts on probably one of the biggest rivalries in MLB. The Dodgers and Giants are a game separate these two, and the Giants are still within the thick of things with all of the pieces that have moved around. They got healthy, and, you know, Buster Posey's hitting the ball. You got Belt out there hitting the ball, and their pitchers actually been actually helping you guys. Your thoughts between that Dodgers-Giants rivalry?
Well, you know, the thing that I find ironic, and, you know, maybe this is the whole – you know, the reason why the rivalry is so intense, but, you know, the Dodgers have the highest payroll in baseball. And then you look at the team that's one game behind them, and they're basically playing with Cracker Jacks and trinket toys. It just seems like every year somebody leaves the Giants, and every year they get a little bit better. They lose Pablo Sandoval, the guy who is kind of the key cog of the team, the clutch hitter, if you will, and they just keep on trucking. You know, I was talking with another baseball fan the other day, and Ty, I challenge you and Nacho to do this. If you look at the starting lineups for the Dodgers and the Giants, outside of Buster Posey, the catcher, name me one other player that you would take from the Giants over the Dodgers. You just can't. What the Giants are doing just defies logic, but they do it every single year.
Is Bumgarner included?
No, Bumgarner is not included because they only trot out once every 5 days, but I hear what you're saying, and the Bumgarner versus Clayton Kershaw, you know, that's a debate for another time and a different day, but I know me and you agree on that. We both said a year ago we would take Bumgarner, and I told you he would be the difference maker, and he was. But I just think that it's amazing to see what the Giants do in a pitcher-friendly park, that they just continue to grind out wins with guys cast off from other teams that really nobody wants. They always seem to get lucky every year by not getting bit with the injury bug. You know, you look at some teams, half their roster right now is, you know, on the DL. You look at a team like Miami that's, you know, lost D. Gordon for a substantial period of time, just recently lost Giancarlo Stanton for, you know, a month and a half. They always seem to stay healthy. I mean, it defies explanation or logic, Ty. I wish I could give you an answer. But like I said, I always go back to the logic of if you lined up both rosters and you looked at it, right field, left field, you know, center field, third base, shortstop, second base, first base, is there anybody on the Giants that you would take over the Dodgers? And it's always the same answer for me, which is no. So it defies logic how the Giants, it's not just that they're one game behind, Ty. It's the fact that the Giants dominate this series. They always beat the Dodgers. You go back and look at the last three or four years and how the Giants have played against the Dodgers, including this year, and the Giants own the Dodgers.
And I slipped up and overlooked that situation with Giancarlo Stanton. And before we get the walk out of here, he's out for the next 4 to 6 weeks on an awkward swing that he took. And this dude swings like a doggone mammoth at the doggone plate. I mean, he literally hit a ball out of Dodger Stadium. I'm not talking out over the fence. He hit it out of Dodger Stadium. I'm not going to lie. As a, you know, paying more attention to him this year, I'm a fan. I cannot lie. I am a Stanton fan right now. But talk about Miami holding their doggone breath, a $325 million investment out now. And this is his left wrist, which isn't his, you know, his strong hand at the end of the day. But this is very tough while these guys are heavily under 500 in the NL East also. Just something that Brian touched on. I mean, if you guys don't want to touch on it, that's fine. But it's up to you, Brian, if you want to. I know a lot of people don't like talking Marlins baseball.
Well, like you said, I mean, here's what I'll say. It's nice to finally see a guy get paid and continue to perform. You know, everybody wants to bring up the negatives, and I'll be the first one, Ty. I know I said, hey, look, the Marlins never pay anybody. They finally pay this kid, and I don't know if this kid was the right person to pay $325 million to, but I give him a lot of credit. He's continued to perform. As he exited the game, he was leading the league in home runs. His average is still Stanton-esque. I mean, he is one of, if not the best, young players in the game, you know, and I say that with a grain of salt because obviously Mike Trout's on my team and I love him, but there's certain things about Giancarlo's game that I appreciate and like even more than Trout's game. And I think that this kid is phenomenal. Like I said, in every year, you know, you mentioned it, the power in his swing. I watched that hit that went out of Dodger Stadium, and Ty, I'll tell you, if you go back and watch it, I encourage all of you to do this. It doesn't even look like he got it on the button. I mean, his arms are tucked in a little bit. he didn't have full extension, so, you know, the mind starts to wander. I wonder what he could have hit if he gets his arms fully extended and his bat is a little ahead of that ball. I mean, he's got ridiculous power, and he's obviously going to be missed from this lineup. But, you know, the Marlins, this is one of those things I was just talking about injuries and stuff. You look at the Marlins on paper, they're a playoff team. They're a team that is contending for a title this year. And you know what? Due to injuries and some other things, it just hasn't worked out that way. But you still have to give the Marlins a lot of credit because they went out there and they really went for it this year, which is the first time we've really ever seen that. They give Carlos a big contract. They bring in D. Gordon. They bring in Prado. You know, they bring in some quality players to help on this team, but for, you know, a few different reasons, injury being a large one, it just didn't work out. But you can't take away the fact that the Marlins did go for it this year, which is nice to see. You still there, Ty? There we go. Kid, you ready to go? Go brush your hair, Mom. You guys put the other one on?
No.
You should go put the both put the other one on. Ty, we can't hear you.
Ty?
There we go, there we go.
No, this is Nacho. I can't hear Ty.
Okay. Well, Nacho, we're having some kind of technical difficulties. If you want to chime in on either of the best baseball topics, feel free. Otherwise,
I'm sorry. If you guys hear me out, I had a technical difficulty. Okay, okay, good. And the situation that I was talking about with Stanton, and I had a little hiccup here. I don't know what was going on, but I think it was within this week or a week and a half ago, he hit a home run that did not get any higher than, I want to say, like 10 feet. Like, he hit a screamer that just basically just went straight out of the park. But there was an interesting thing that you hit on comparing him to Trout. I think at the plate, he's more dangerous than Trout, but overall player, I'm actually taking Trout over Giancarlo Stanton. I would take Trout. Trout is a hustler. He goes at that fence, and he, to me, he's underpaid. I really wish, and this is just for your purpose, too, I really wish the Angels would end up paying him, but they won't. They playing so much hardball with this guy. But that somebody will end up paying him if they keep playing hardball with a guy like Trout. I'm sorry for the little hiccup. I had to get in and out of the kitchen real quick. But I don't know what you guys are touching on before we shut it down.
All I said was I was throwing it over to Nacho because he'd been quiet for a little while. I just asked him if he wanted to comment either on the Giants and Dodgers or if he wanted to comment on Gene Carlos before we head out of the kitchen.
No, Gene Carlo, just an amazing guy, horrible thing that happened to him. Nothing more that you've already said that I would have to say. And Giants and Dodgers, they can go to HE double hockey sticks.
That's a Diamondback fan for you.
Hey, you know what? He's just mad, Ty, because when the Giants or the Dodgers are playing the Diamondbacks, they got that already a W on the calendar.
They do. It's bad. I just mark them L's, and it's just horrible now. But
Just move on.
That's kind of like the early rounds of Rocky up against Drago. Get out of here!
I was thinking more like Thunder Lips, where he gets thrown out of the ring, but that'll work.
Yeah, it's Drago bad over here.
At least the Drago one makes sense. Get out of there, because you don't want to be in that doggone corner taking them hits to the stomach like that. That's for sure, because that's end up what killing Apollo Creed. Rest in peace, Apollo. Rest in peace. All right, well, we are at the tail end of the brunch, and we got the little giggles in at the end of the show. Tune in throughout the week. I need to get these guys to give their plug, close out anything they like to promote as we shut it down. Don't forget, July is coming, so football will be back in the kitchen very soon, very soon. I can see it over the horizon. So stay tuned, Sports City. I need a plug and close out from both of you. I'll start with you first, Nacho. Thank you for coming to the brunch. Whatever you need to do to help shut it down here at the brunch.
I came in about 30 minutes late, so I don't recall. I didn't hear what was going on at the beginning of the show. But last night I watched 11 rounds in 2 minutes and 50 seconds of great officiating, ruined by 10 seconds of horrible officiating in the Timothy Bradley and Jesse Vargas fight last night. It was a great fight. Timothy won all the rounds, most of the rounds. I had him winning the fight. If you didn't see it, Timothy got caught with an overhand right, nasty, staggered, wobbling back. Vargas to his credit and not to his credit, did not continue the attack, was able to let Timothy Bradley run around the ring for a second, and the 10-second knocks, which is a distinct different sound from the bell, went off. And the ref called the fight. There was roughly about 7-8 seconds left in the fight, and the ref waved it off. And to Jesse Vargas' confusion, he thought he had won the fight by knockout. When actuality, the ref thought he heard the bell and ended the fight. So, you know, the cards were what they were. We all had Timothy winning on all the cards. I think that's safe to say that Timothy Bradley was winning on everybody's card. But who's to say if 7 seconds were to go on and Jesse doesn't, you know, hit him with a left or a right or a clean uppercut and knock him down. And possibly the way he looked after that right overhand, he could have possibly knocked him out and been down for the 10 count and won a fight that he pretty much lost the entire fight and won it in the last 20 seconds in the last round. So I'm very disappointed at the refs, at the ref and the officiating he did in those last 15 seconds, 10 seconds. I'm just not – I won't give the excuse that it was too loud. I won't give any excuse to the ref. He totally messed up and he failed as an officiator. Like I said, he did great for most of the match. He was letting them fight. He was not breaking them up as much. When something went wrong, he was able to stop it and say, yo, bring up the fight, bring up the punches. You know, don't grab the back of his head. You know, he was saying things like, you don't need me, break out. He was doing all the right things throughout the entire fight. And he ruined the last 10 seconds for Jesse and myself and most fight fans out there. Because, like I said, who knows what could have happened. Yeah, Timothy probably could have slipped away and got away, and the end all is still the same. But 7 seconds is 7 seconds, and you don't need more than one and a half to throw one punch. So I'm just a little disappointed at that. But over and all, both fights last night on HBO were amazing. We have the sorry, I forgot the first fight because I've been so concerned with the Bradley fight. But if you take a look back at it, it was a featherweight fight. The guy who's looking to challenge Vasyl Lomachenko, who pound for pound might be the best, and that's including Floyd Mayweather. So it's one of those things where I'm excited to see. You know, like I said before, I don't really pay attention to the featherweights, but you know, they're trying to turn my head now with the way they're getting at it and fighting each other. So last night was pretty good in boxing. MMA last night, we saw the passing of the torch, so to speak, and Machida and Romero. Machida, pretty much, I don't know what's left for him now. He's kind of been to the mountaintop and he's taken some losses and had some big wins. So I'm not sure what Machida does next, but we might see Romero on the rise. That was an interesting fight last night. And again, at Nacho in the Box, full fight on Saturdays, had a little trouble yesterday. We'll be back as soon as possible. Side note, personal note, last night in the prelims, if you had Fox Sports 2, you probably watched the fight with Danny Martinez, a homegrown guy from the state of Arizona, from my hometown, my high school. You know, everything out to him. Just wanted to say, you know, whatever about him last night. You know, he did a great job, what have you. At Nacho in the Box, food fight. Again, you know, July's coming around. Football, back-to-back MVPs. Let's do it. Go, Pat, go.
All you need to do is walk back around this brunch, check the download. We talked about 30 minutes on this fight. So you missing the early portion of the meal is where you missed that one. But Lomachenko, pound for pound, better than Floyd, and he only got like 6 fights under his belt?
Well, 6 professional fights, but the man's fought over 1,000 times.
Hey, that's all we know. It is professional. I'm not worried about him fighting his cousin Joseph in the backyard. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about people that we know in Ring Magazine, that type of stuff. That's what counts. Seven fights to 48 and 0? Brother, you see, research. That's all I'm asking. Don't do that. You just started paying attention to the lightweight. Now you're giving him the leg up. We'll save that for the food fight, Sports City. We about to have a food fight during the brunch. Look, okay, Mr. Hughes, help me shut it down. Excellent show. Another epic episode. Say that fast 3 times at the brunch.
Epic episode. Hey, quick shout out to Nacho. Just because we talked about the fight for the first 30 minutes didn't mean you had to spend the last 30 minutes talking about it. I'm just playing. You know, I had some pent up frustration and aggression because Aaron didn't show up today, so I wasn't able to throw any jabs at him. But SportsCityChefs.com, check out the website. the player interviews, the blogs. As Ty said, we do have football coming around the corner. Guys, it was a pleasure talking with you. Once again, I had the same shout-out last week. Our USA women's soccer team, the national team, did defeat China 1-0. We advanced to the quarterfinals against Germany, who is the absolute favorite in this tournament. If we get by Germany, which we will, it's going to be clear sailing from there. So I just want a quick shout-out to the women. And, Morgan, you are a beast.
And oh, by the way, since he did bring that up, and I'm slipping on my soccer stuff, and I hate to talk junk like this, but it's a competitive nature in me like that. Ha-ha to the China national soccer team. We're not even blaming them. I guess the government officials out there in China, because they were trying to grant the Chinese women team, if they were to beat USA, each player on that team would have respectively gotten $250,000 apiece if they were to beat America. Talk about how bad they have it out for us. They wanted to beat us that bad. That bad. Like, and one day you score one more goal than them, and here go $250,000. Just, man, please. I know they probably were crying, and it's just a doggone game. I mean, not to look at it like that, but it's the truth. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog, the chefs. Should be back here tomorrow, Monday Night Sport, wrapping this thing up. Hopefully everybody enjoys their Sunday. It should be an epic one. And throughout this week, this is the 4th of July weekend coming up. So this should be a very interesting weekend, to say the most, throughout Sports City. But like I said, we got chefs working their way back, trying to get the football shows involved in Sports City. You should be hearing about us soon. Check us out throughout the Sports City Chef Twitter and Facebook pages. We'll keep you updated, to say the most. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Thomas holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody, don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark, the Moses, and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts.